I've enjoyed playing here. This has been over 20 years that I've been coming to Royal Melbourne. And this is the way golf should be played.
We love coming down under.
Look, it's phenomenal to play. The quality of the golf's been great. But the enthusiasm of the people has been the thing that's just been amazing.
Tier of courses that I'm willing to shave my neck for in Kingston Heath, Victoria. Get me out of bed to shave.
Especially somewhere like Australia in the Sand Belt, and I have so many great memories of being down there.
G'day and welcome back to Australian Golf Passport. It's been a minute. We've been a little bit tardy through April, but Matt Moliker and myself are back face-to-face to have another chat about one of our favourite golf courses in Australia. G'day, Matty.
Hi, Scott. Apologies to one and all out there. A little bit of a hangover after the landmark birthday celebrations earlier in the month, but we're back on the horse and ready to go. And yeah, very excited to talk about Newcastle, a place that's always been a joy to go and visit.
Yeah, one of the favourites. I don't know anyone that's gone there and said that they don't think it's up to much. So a lot of listeners have been telling us they want to hear about Newcastle. We've been really keen to have a chat about it. So today's the day. And a little tease, I guess, as well for what will follow up this episode. We had a chat a bit earlier this week with Bob Harrison, who is, of course, on deck to be doing the changes to Newcastle in the next, hopefully, year or two. That might kick off. It's been a long time coming. So, yeah, really wide-ranging chat with Bob that will follow this episode. But, yeah, a little bit of Newcastle stuff in that too.
Yeah, it was fantastic to chat with him. I'm sure everyone's going to get as big a buzz out of that as we did recording it.
Yeah. Now, before we jump off into news of the week, and there's a little apology to be made following up from our Q&A mailbag episode at the start of April, our sponsor, Angus and Grace Go Golfing. Really excited to have Angus and Grace Go Golfing on board. We've been loving wearing the polos and the shorts and the trousers from Angus and Grace. Really excited to see that the winter collection, Maddie's starting to drop, and there's some really cool looking pieces in that.
Yeah, great wet weather top that I've seen Adrian Logue modeling in one or two social media shots. I've seen more and more of their women's portfolio getting released on Instagram and photos of that range for the cooler months. Some awesome retro clubs in store too. I've seen Matt put up some pictures of some beautiful old copper beryllium irons, some nice old putters, some original tailor-made metal woods as well. That are some really cool stuff in store. Be well worth a visit going to see him.
I saw on Instagram during the week someone leaving Angus and Grace Go Golfing with a 975D driver with that UST Pro-Force shaft, 7.5 degrees aloft. I mean, I couldn't get that thing over knee height with 7.5 degrees, but it's cute.
Yeah, great driver. Great driver. I've got one in 9 degree with that shaft, and I still stand by the fact that drivers should never have got bigger than that. But that's a topic for a different day.
Very quickly, the neighbours over the road have a 15, 16-year-old, and about 18 months ago, he wanted to try golf. And so my mate said to me, do you have any old clubs he could borrow while he works out if he likes it? And so I lent him a set of Mizuno Tezoid Pro irons. He's got a 17 degree of the Titleist PT, and he's got my 975D, which is 9 degrees. And he loves golf. He apparently has no interest in upgrading his clubs. So he's got quite the mid. It's the 90 set I wish I had when I was 15 or 16, but I was no chance of getting those clubs then. So yeah, that stuff is really good fun. And I should also mention, you mentioned the Angus and Grace women's collection. It's Mother's Day in Australia on the 14th of May, a couple of weeks away. And so, yeah, if you are looking for something for the woman in your life, either buying a present on behalf of your kids for your wife, or if you're buying something for your mum, she doesn't need to be a golfer. The stuff that Angus and Grace makes, you know, works perfectly off the course as well. Yeah, do give them a look and jump in there with enough time for it to ship to you. And I know that whoever receives that's going to love, you know, the sweaters, the skirts, the polos, the golf daddy hats. They're fantastic.
That's a good suggestion. Now, speaking of getting things shipped, you had a very good experience earlier in the week receiving something golf related.
Yeah, I just want to shout out very quickly Big Dog Golf Co., which is another, like Angus and Grace, a a very small Australian manufacturer. They predominantly make head covers, but then also little goodie bags like tea bags and whatnot, as in bags to put your golf tees in, not tea bags that you would have a beverage from. Their head covers are incredible. I've had a few for about 2 years now, leather covers that are just incredible, beautiful quality. And yeah, I again had another great experience during the week. And I'm just so pleased that we're in this era where there's a lot of these little companies popping up where people who are just, you know, driven by absolute passion for golf and for really high quality golf things, you know, whether it's clubs or whether it's clothing or it's head covers, you know, it runs the full gamut. And Big Dog's one of my favorites. And so I just thought, this is not an ad, but it's just, I've had such great experiences. I wanted to share that. So have a look for them online. They're magnificent. They actually do, conversion of, you know, we've talked about before on the episodes, Maddie, about having golf shirts that we don't wear anymore and what can you do with them. I've seen some examples of people sending, you know, old Wallabies jerseys or whatnot to Big Dog, yeah, and having it repurposed into three or four head covers and a, you know, valuables pouch and whatnot. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, Swans jersey, an old vinyl golf bag. And I was like, oh, no, don't cut into that. And then they had, and I was actually thought, huh, okay, they've done a better job than I ever thought possible. So they turned that into a sort of suite of covers for driver, wood, hybrid, putter. So he does some great stuff. They've gone gangbusters in the last 2 years by the looks of it. They're in the pro shop at Tarraity. They're in the pro shop at Royal Melbourne. Lots of other places that you'd hit on a red letter golf trip. So yeah, keep an eye out for them and support them if you can. Like a lot of other, as you said, a lot of other creative Aussies who are doing good things in that artisan golf space. Will Watts, like that, founder and editor of Caddy magazine. Caddy sort of came to a conclusion after their 10th episode or 10th volume a while ago. And Will's now doing a lot more photography with contours. He's done some amazing AI, some course design on Instagram in the last day or two for those who continue to follow that account. He's done some great drone photography over the Mornington Peninsula and overlaid a course into the landscape, which looks phenomenal. So
I think Contours Golf Travel is the new Instagram handle there.
Yep, you're right. Yeah.
If anyone's enjoyed the great fly-throughs on the National Golf Club website, that's all Will's work. He's an absolute master with the drone.
Yeah, he's one of the pioneers of that. He's just revamped the Royal Melbourne Golf Club website. He did Barwon Heads a few years ago as well. Did some beautiful stuff for them. And heaps of other clubs. So yeah.
Really excited about this new venture for Will. He's one of the good guys in Aussie golf media, and yeah, be good to see what comes of Contours Golf Travel.
Yeah.
Right, Newcastle.
Actually, before we start Newcastle, we've got one mea culpa. Wouldn't be an Australian golf passport without a mea culpa. We had a mailbag episode in our previous edition, and we were asking for the Aussie versions of Augusta National, and somehow Royal Canberra eluded both of us.
Yeah. Well, it's actually the one. Like, it's not just another candidate amongst the others that we mentioned. It's absolutely the probably best combination of all the things that Augusta National is. You know, the aesthetic, it's a lovely club. It's got some design similarities on the back nine there with that winding creek So anyway, apologies to Royal Canberra. Apologies to Clates, who seemed incensed that we'd missed that.
And yeah, heads up. Yeah, thank you, Scott Campbell and lots of others who just reminded us of our little slip there. So
indeed.
Thank you. All right, let's get on to the main fair, Newcastle. I've got to say at the outset, Scott, I'm a tiny little bit envious of you that Newcastle is infinitely closer to you than it is to me. Because if you just want to get in your car and go, you can.
Yeah. And that's not been more apparent to me than actually this very weekend. I was up in the Hunter Valley for a wedding, and I was reminded of just how doable that drive is. You know, it's pretty much all motorway. Newcastle Golf Club, obviously a little bit closer to Sydney than the Hunter Valley itself. And I actually did think to myself as we were driving back this morning, I need to be back on this motorway soon and go and see Newcastle. It's been a few years and it's too long.
So for the rest of us, it's a $10 cab fare from Newcastle Airport. I don't think it's anything beyond that. So yeah, you can fly to Newcastle from all major centres, and that journey, as we'll flesh out in the next 45 minutes or so, is well worth the effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And Newcastle Airport does get a little bit overlooked in terms of, I mean, it goes to, you know, essentially Canberra, Ballina, Byron, Sydney, Gold Coast, Melbourne, Brisbane, Sunshine Coast Airport, Whitsundays Airport, Cairns Airport, Adelaide Airport, as well as Cobar and Lord Howe Island, if you happen to be there. So okay. People always think, oh, we'll fly into Sydney and you've got to drive up the motorway. But yeah, if you're flying from essentially any big place in Australia on the kind of east, southeast coast, you can just fly straight into Newcastle. I know you and a group of mates did that, you know, about 10 years ago when we had a trip in that region.
Yeah. Done it a couple of times and it's just so easy. Yeah. And so if you stay close by, it's a short little trip into the town, and then it's obviously really simple to get back home when your days are done.
Newcastle, the city, is having a bit of a moment as well. It's traditionally a mining town, and you know, the whole Hunter region is a mining economy. Newcastle in the past probably 7 or 8 years has really refreshed itself. There used to be a big rail line that was fenced off, running straight through the middle of the town between the city centre and the waterfront. That's been removed and replaced with light rail, so you can move across the rail corridor now, and it's just opened up the whole city. There's been a huge amount of renewal going on. I think it's Derby Street in the eastern side of town is a really cool dining, coffee, food sort of place. You know, some of the old pubs have upped their game just enough that they're, you know, a little bit more attractive, but still very authentic. I got a heap of time. The surf club over on, I think it's Merriweather Beach, you know, one of the many great kind of venues to sit and have a meal and some beers or whatnot overlooking the ocean. So, yeah, it's actually a really great little place in its own right. If you're in Sydney and you were going to go up to play Newcastle, I'd certainly say, you know, spend a night just to enjoy Newcastle itself.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. My memory of going there on a more recent trip than the one that you just referenced before was that there were a couple of pubs that weren't too schmick. They were just right. They were good meals and, yeah, really cozy places to go and round out a golf trip. So, yeah, there would be way worse ways to spend a few days than playing Newcastle once or twice, one or two other courses up there and hitting that entertainment precinct, as you said.
Yeah. So Newcastle Golf Club, I guess to set the scene, is on the opposite side of the Hunter River, which winds in through the middle of Newcastle. And so you're essentially on the far side of that in Stockton. So you're not too far as the crow flies from Newcastle, but it is probably it's a 15-minute drive or so to get around Kooringang Island there onto Newcastle, the northern side, into the golf club. But as you say too, then it's maybe 5 minutes north of that is Newcastle Airport. So it's on a little finger, I guess, of land in between the Hunter River and the Pacific Ocean. And there's not a huge amount around there. There's a little bit of housing, but you're essentially, you know, you've got the river almost touching the course to the west. And although it doesn't really feel like it when you're playing golf, you don't notice it. You're only probably 400 meters from the sand dunes on Stockton Beach.
Yeah, they're really close. When you've, depending on the way in which you fly in, there's these huge swathes of sand that you can see on the final descent into Newcastle. And if you're on the right side of the plane and the plane's flying in on approach in the right way for you, you get to see just how close it is to the shore. You're never aware of that really as you play, as you said, but you are quite close. And the topography sort of reflects that. There's, as we'll get into more and more, there's big rolling dunes and nice soil, and the vegetation's reflective of that proximity to the water as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the wind blowing is another reminder of that.
So they've been playing golf there for almost a century. They started playing there back in 1915.
On that site.
Yeah. So Fred Popplewell laid out 9 holes in 1915. And I think you've got a Hickory Golf Club in your New South Wales set, Scott, that's got Fred Popplewell's name on it.
It does. Yeah, I Excellent. Do.
Good on you.
Yeah. Well, there's a road that kind of winds in behind the 4th and 5th holes on the course that is called Popplewell Road. So he is remembered. What there isn't is a Appley Road, but of course it's Eric Appley that we really owe the golf course at Newcastle to.
Yeah. Yeah. He came in some decades later and reworked things and probably took a lot of the lessons that he had learned at New South Wales and applied them to a similarly high quality and undulating site at Newcastle, and then ended up giving us a course that we enjoy to this day. If you can indulge me, Rand Morissette, who was the founder of Golf Club Atlas, was in Australia for, was he in Australia for 2 years?
Handful of years, I think, in the kind of late 90s and then maybe just after 2000.
Yeah. So he played Newcastle a lot, has friends there still.
Well, he was living in Bondi and joined Newcastle because he was loved the place so much. He just joined up there and thought, well, I'll do a bit of motorway driving and enjoy Newcastle. Yeah, so he's definitely one of its biggest fans.
Yeah, so he's written lots about it. He says it has an ingredient common to many great courses. It is unique and reminds one of no other course.
Yeah, that is a great, very succinct description, I think, of what makes it so special it's just Newcastle. It's not, I can't even think of other courses that it is, you know, sometimes you'll say, oh, it's, you know, National Old crossed with New South Wales, maybe for a course like the Cut or something. But no, it's like Newcastle is just Newcastle. And I think there's a bit of, for me, I think obvious routing inspiration from New South Wales Golf Club that Eric Appley had worked on before he went to Newcastle. But I think in terms of the style of the holes that he built, you know, the way it's routed, and also just the club itself. It has a bit like maybe Port Fairy, has a very unique genre that it's Newcastle.
Yeah. There's a typical sort of Aussie aesthetic there, but that's the only thing that I think you can probably look at when you play Newcastle and find commonality across other courses.
Yeah. I think one of the things that strikes me about Newcastle is that it's very functional. There's nothing that's been done on that course that wasn't done to directly impact the playing of the holes. You know, there's not eye candy on the sides. There's not, you know, the clubhouse is very simple and does the job it needs to do. You know, the course is just very kind of functional, and I want to say utilitarian, but that, I think that kind of sounds like a criticism, but it's, I just like the fact that Appley did what he needed to do to build a really engaging, interesting golf course, but there's not a whole bunch of extras going on. And yeah, look, it is, we'll get to the changes that are proposed that Bob Harrison and Scott Champion will be carrying out. There is something that I like about some of the holes at Newcastle that aren't great holes. You know, we think of maybe 16, 18, 1. They're lesser holes if you were going to really study the architecture, but it's just very pleasant, basic golf at the same time. You know, it takes the land that it has, uses it smartly to create interesting shots, you know, but I kind of have a soft spot for some of that golf that's, you know, the land doesn't give it much to work with, but it's just a good smart little hole. 16's a good example at Newcastle. You know, it's about a 200 meter par 3, but the greens, you know, it slopes a bit from left to right. So the green plays with that side slope, you know, feeding towards, you know, quite a large bunker that kind of dominates the right side of the hole. You're hitting a long club, so short ride obviously is a pretty likely ending point for a lot of people. I just think it's that smart, simple architecture that often you'll play a hole like that and think, oh, there's not much to that. But you also often play those holes and you don't find that you score quite as well as you think you should. And often I think there's just a subtlety that doesn't necessarily get recognized. But so, yeah, you know, it's a bit like for me, this talk about changing Port Fairy and building new holes on the back nine a bit closer to the ocean. And I get the enthusiasm for trying to strengthen things even more and improve a place. But most courses, I wouldn't have such an acute concern, but I'm really excited for what they're planning at Newcastle. But a little part of me feels the way that I feel when people talk about changing Port Fairy. And it's just that once you change it, it's changed forever. And you need to be really certain that the change, you know, is the right thing for the place. You know, Newcastle, the club has struggled a little bit in recent years. And so I think the development, you know, that's going to take out 16, 17, 18 and 1 to build an aged care facility, I think it's going to give the club the financial surety for the future, which is such an incredibly important thing. You know, big city clubs, you know, might have 3-year wait lists and 5-figure joining fees and all is good. I think we need to remind ourselves sometimes that golf outside of that environment sometimes is on pretty tight margins. So, you know, I'm not suggesting Newcastle shouldn't be doing what they're doing. And I think Bob and Scott are a really good choice to do that work. But yeah, it's just that little bit of concern. I don't know if you kind of share a similar feeling or if you think I'm being overly sensitive.
I think it's a really common characteristic to harbour a little bit of hesitancy whenever something that you hold so fondly is slated for change.
Mm.
Particularly something like Newcastle, where, as you said, there's an understated element to it and there's restraint, particularly on those holes that are routed over lesser land. Restraint is really one of its main characters. And so often these days we see new courses or course renovation where everything's dialed up to 10, everything's a signature hole, everything's geared towards visual impact. And thankfully, Bob and Scott are the ones charged with the task of seeing out the Newcastle changes, because I don't think that they're that way inclined at all. So you've got good custodians who understand what they're working with. So I'm probably more relaxed about it than some others would be. We put out a call for questions on Instagram prior to recording the Newcastle episode, and someone referenced the fact that there were changes afoot. Should I be worried? And so we're not alone in having some degree of hesitation regarding the alterations to the course. But I think the course is in good hands with Bob.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, it will be different. And that doesn't mean it will be better or worse. It'll be different. One of the things that I was concerned about that Bob goes through this in greater detail when we speak with him, but I've been concerned that there's this plan to build 7 new holes, and anytime you see a new hole or new holes built in a course, you know, you would hope that if the scope is to build a limited amount of new holes, that whoever's building those holes would work to make them match in with the rest of the golf course. Of course, that never happens in practice. You know, an architect will want to put their flourish on the shaping of bunkers and greens and whatnot, and invariably you can spot the new hole a mile away. It's been my concern that would be what ended up transpiring at Newcastle. But Bob's told us that the 11 holes of the existing course that are remaining will have greens and bunkers rebuilt. So that will mean that they have this continuity across all 18 holes of bunkering and green shapes. And I think Bob makes a good point, you know, and that episode, you know, will not be, that chat's not part of this episode. It will follow in a subsequent episode in a few days to a week or so. But that probably the thing that makes Newcastle so great is the land and the routing and the movement and the way that all comes to life in the golf holes, placement of tees and greens to really take advantage. What's possibly not the thing that you rave about when you leave Newcastle is the green shapes and the bunkering. So there is, you know, undeniably probably some room for improvement in those in terms of creating some interest. I mean, the fourth hole, I think, is the perfect example. You know, tucked in on the inside of the dogleg in the drive zone is eight almost perfectly circular bunkers that don't look great. I think eight little bunkers probably, they don't play that great, in my opinion. So, yeah, is there improvement to be had there? Absolutely.
Yeah, I think he references directly that wish to bring the design quality of green complexes and hazards in line with the quality of the topography on the site and the quality of the routing. And that's definitely one area where it can improve. There can be a little more design quality to a couple of the greens, a little more intricacy without being too fussy to a couple that I can think of, particularly the second, which will serve as the home hole under the new reconfiguration, if I understood him correctly. So
yes, it will. Yeah. And I guess, well, if we're going to cast forward, having said that the course doesn't really have any, you know, spirit brother or sister somewhere that we'd say it's a bit like, I mean, the terrain is probably a bit like the Cups country down on the Mornington Peninsula. And Bob Harrison, obviously the man who brought Nationals Moona course to life out of that terrain. So, you know, if we allowed ourselves to just embrace change and what's coming at Newcastle, I mean, if Bob produced the sorts of greens and really gnarly natural bunkers that he built at National, I think everyone would be pretty happy with that outcome.
Yeah, there's a really natural sort of character to a lot of the hazards on that course, and they would, something in that genre would be a good fit at Newcastle and better than much of the stuff that's there at the moment.
Mm.
Particularly those ones on the inside of four, as you said, they're perfectly placed, but they're terrible in appearance.
The ugliest sin. Yeah.
Talking about four, that seems a good point to address the topography. We've referenced it a few times and we've referenced the similarity with the Cups country and New South Wales. And you said that Eric Appley did a lot of work at New South Wales and is the guiding hand at Newcastle. There's, once you walk off that second green at Newcastle, there's a seven-hole stretch, nine-hole stretch, maybe even 10-hole stretch if you want to eat deeper into the back nine, of just sensational golf hole, one after the other after the other. And it owes a lot to the land over which it is routed. Five and six are probably the two highlight moments in that stretch, you'd say.
Yeah, through really heaving land, they sort of hug the valleys between the dunes, five rolling downhill pretty aggressively, six climbing back up the hill. Yeah, I think those are the holes that often people will rave about on a first play. And then it's the next hole that I think as people play it more, or if they are really attuned to good architecture, maybe even on the first play, that little par three seventh is just a really clever little hole. It's not more than a seven or eight iron. The greens, just maybe half a club below you, some really good slopes in and around the green that will mean balls release into places that you hadn't imagined. Yeah, that is, I mean, I would potentially say it's an 11-hole stretch. I would argue maybe 3 through 13 is all kill and no filler.
Yeah.
But yeah, that stretch I think is, it's some of the best land. It's some of the best golf. But then, you know, it speaks to how good Newcastle is that you can chat with someone and enthuse about all the great stuff. And you might talk for half an hour before someone mentions eight, you know, or 11. And those are, you know, those are really terrific, both sort of drive and pitch par fours, both incredible in their own right. So it really is like Newcastle's, its best is very, very good, but those lesser holes on good land are still just really fascinating. And that little delicate pitch into eight. I don't think I've ever really felt comfortable with it. I've tried driving up adjacent to the green because I figured, well, a bunker shot's probably just as easy. You know, there is a bit of tree drama on the inside of that hole. I'll be curious if Bob's changes involve a little bit of tree removal where it kind of detracts from the golf a little bit. But, yeah, it really is, you know, not many courses have an 11-hole stretch that you would call out as a stretch, you know, without a breather in the middle where it drops a little bit.
Yeah, nine's that par five that goes down and up and then finishes in the shadows of the clubhouse, and that's over dramatic land. 10's like I tried to describe it to my son while we were drawing golf holes together a while ago, because I've been thinking about Newcastle in the lead up to the episode. And I said, 10's sort of like you would draw a caterpillar in that it goes up and down and up and down. And yeah, it was brave by Appley to traverse that land the way in which he did, because not a lot of designers would have taken that stuff head on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's probably one of the specific holes that makes me think what Appley saw of McKenzie at New South Wales gave him the confidence to do that. You know, like McKenzie's fifth and 12th holes at New South Wales, which are essentially what's still there today. His 14th, you know, which from the McKenzie tee right of 13 green at New South Wales, that 14th really goes over some wild stuff. And I think, having seen that from, you know, the world-renowned kind of best of the era architect, I can sort of imagine Appley going up to Stockton and seeing that 10th fairway and thinking, I'm just going to go straight over the top of this.
Mm, absolutely. As an aside, I saw a photo of Gary Lisbon's drone shot of 14 at New South Wales recently. I should see if I can dig it up, or I might add it to our story in the coming days. We always talk about that terrain heaving and really moving a lot at that part of the course. And man, his shot did it justice.
Yeah.
I stopped and really, really looked at it and thought, I've undersold this. I knew it moved, but this photo just showed how much it did.
Yeah. So, to digress a little further, just for a moment, I was thinking about this when we were talking about Will Watt earlier as well, and your mention of Gary's picture at New South. There's a lot of people in golf who've been in golf for a very long time, who are a little bit critical of drones and the role that they've started to play in showing off golf courses. And there's this argument that it's not the golfer's eye view. And so, you know, it's selling a vision that you don't get playing the course and et cetera. I get that. But what it does do, you know, previously we've either had ground level photos or we've had aerials from directly above, neither of which I think are very good at showing off land movement and terrain and sometimes, you know, the scale of the way things sit. And I think drones have been an amazing addition to showing off what's great about so many great courses on terrific land, in that you raise up just high enough that you can see, you know, if it was a ground level shot, the photo would be of a ridge and there's 300 yards behind it that you can't see. Just getting up a little bit allows you to see how the roles work, and you can kind of picture playing the hole through, you know, the land movement. I think it's actually added a ton, and it kills me. You see, you know, some arguments now and then on Twitter or on Golf Club Atlas, etc., saying that it's a absolute bastardization of showing off golf. I feel the 100% opposite, that those sorts of drone shots, and Gary's is a perfect example, they just really show off the courses the way that really we've never been able to before.
Yeah, agreed. It's another view. For those who can't read a topo map, you get a really different perspective on it, and it's better than an aerial from 15,000 feet. I don't get the dislike of them. But anyway,
it's
a big world.
But so, yeah, I mean, the land at Newcastle, particularly, I guess, from the 10th hole heading towards the ocean. So largely the middle and end of the back nine and then the 10th hole are what sit on that really amazing land. And so in the new version of the course that is going to be built, we sort of get three more holes on that land. So there's a little par three that sits between the current 8th and 11th. And then there's a short four that's going to be the closest thing to the ocean sort of on the course. And it sits off to the right of the 7th hole behind the 6th green. This is all the current hole numbering. Obviously, hole numbering will change. But, yeah, I think what's kind of exciting when you think about where the best land is that we're getting more golf on the land that kind of heaves and rolls closer to the ocean.
Yeah, and it's moving further away from that road on the boundary of the property. It's giving Bob and Scott an opportunity to reconfigure the course so that some of those holes, the newer holes, probably don't provide as much of a headache in terms of boundary issues as that 16, 17, 18 stretch does currently. I can imagine that must be a major source of concern regarding litigation at the moment. Wouldn't people have driver in hand or three wood in hand on those last three tees? So
yeah. And, you know, a lot of people are aware that in Great Britain, all the Great Links, there's a must-have feature of every Great Links course in Great Britain, and that is an adjacent caravan park. And the great news at Newcastle is that Bob has a brand new par five that gets us right up against the fence of the caravan park. And as a traditionalist and a lover of links golf, I embrace proximity to a caravan park. So all good things, Matty.
Yeah.
Tell you what else is good is that 10 years ago, when you and I were up there together and we were first briefed on the changes, it was a Woolworths development that was going to be on the land along that main road where 16, 17, 18, 1 are. So now it's an aged care development. And I think just in terms of a aesthetic and atmosphere perspective, when you're playing those holes that will be closest to the boundary there, I think having a medium density aged care building, like a residential looking thing versus the loading dock of a Woolies with trucks beeping and reversing and people yelling out to each other. And I think that's for the course, that would have been a real something to overcome in terms of the atmosphere. So I think where they've ended up with aged care is definitely an improvement on what that was initially going to be.
Definitely. Definitely. We had a few questions from listeners regarding accessibility, regarding Newcastle. It was something that I meant to mention at the outset when we were talking about proximity to the airport. It's pretty straightforward. They're obviously a members club with a considerable number of members, but I've always found them to be really welcoming of interstate guests and probably wouldn't need anything more than a phone call or an email just to determine what sort of tea time you could organise. And I think that, from memory, I think that weekends were in play for visitors from interstate as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, the answer is wherever you are from, you can play at Newcastle and it's going to cost you probably a lot less money than you might have expected. So visitor play is available at Newcastle 6 days a week and visiting golfers can book a tee time in competition 7 days prior. So 6 days of the week you can play there. I assume Saturday is the day that you can't as a non-member. Pretty understandable and reasonable. And they do basically $60 as a member's guest, $100 if you belong to another club in the Newcastle District Golf Association, and $160 is the visitor rate for 18 holes, which, given the quality of the golf, is very, very good. And one of the things, I'm not certain this is going to be the case at Newcastle, one of the things you do find often in Australia is that, so that visitor rate is $160, but often if you ring up and you have a Golf Link number and you play in the comp, like the comp, for instance, you know, if it's $160 for a visitor, the comp might be $85 for a non-member. Oftentimes you find that you do get a better green fee playing in comp. And I guess it's that that confidence or whatnot that you are a golfer, you know, you're going to do the right things, etc. So yeah, if you're going to be anywhere near Newcastle, there's 6 of the 7 days of every week that you can play there, so there's not really any excuse. And yeah, there's no real barrier to entry. And really nice too that they give that discount to the members of the other clubs in their region too. I think that's cool.
That brings us to the question of what else is in their region. And you know this better than I do, so I might defer to you for much of the answer to this. But if you're up there for a week, you could fill much of it with golf if you're a sicko and you had to play 18 every day.
Yeah, I mean, let's say a pretty generous definition of the region. So just north of Newcastle is a holiday region called Port Stephens. And then to the west of Newcastle is the Hunter Valley, which is quite well known as a wine region. There's some good golf up in there as well. And just south of Newcastle itself, still, I guess, part of the Hunter, is the Lake Macquarie area. And so not in any order, but I'll just work through, I guess, maybe anti-clockwise from Lake Macquarie. I'm a big fan of Belmont. So Belmont was the home club of Jack Newton. It sits right on the beach. It's got probably 6 or 7 really linksy type holes along the beach. It gets a little bit kind of farmlandy as you go in towards the highway. There's sort of a wetland that the course plays around. Those holes, you know, are a bit softer and probably not as memorable. But Belmont is wonderful. And they have hosted forever this really, really high-ranking amateur event, the Lake Macquarie International Amateur, that, you know, the winners list of that is essentially, you know, they've all gone on to basically great pro careers. So that's always been a course that I've had a lot of time for. We used to go up there annually, my golf club out in the Hawkesbury. We'd have a bus trip for the juniors every year and we'd play the Belmont Junior event. So yeah, I've probably got some fondness for that goes beyond the quality of the golf, but it is very good golf. And being Jack Newton's home, I think, you know, there's a nice little something else about being there. You head up into Port Stephens and you've got Pacific Dunes, which is a James Wiltshire course from this century. It had some flooding issues when it opened, and they've done a lot of work to try and remedy those. It's perfectly pleasant golf. There's, you know, a couple of good holes on there that will be memorable. I think it's about the third hole is a really cool little short 4, but you know, it's not going to blow you away, but it's also nothing at all wrong with it and really, really enjoyable golf. And then up into Port Stephens itself is Horizons, which was a Graham Marsh and Ross Watson course from sort of late 80s, maybe the early 90s. It's built essentially on swampland as part of a residential and resort development. It's struggled a bit for condition over the last 15 years. There was a little period where it went through a few different sets of hands. My grandparents actually retired there about 15 years ago and have you know, played golf there 4 or 5 times a week since. And so I've been up there kind of semi-regularly. I really enjoy it. I think there's some really cool golf on that, some interesting shots. It's not super walkable, which is not the greatest. But yeah, I've always thought that the stuff that Ross Watson did with Graham Marsh is a cut above the stuff that Ross did on his own. And so, yeah, if you're up in that region, definitely Horizons is good fun and worth looking into. The main town in Port Stephens is Nelson Bay. And so Nelson Bay Golf Club has 27 holes. And a little bit like Newcastle in that it's just a very nice Australian country golf club. It has dozens and dozens of kangaroos at sunset or sunrise. So if you're into that kind of thing, that's definitely something about it. Look, it's not it's not amazing golf architecture, but it's certainly nothing wrong with it at all. And so we head up into the Hunter Valley, and we'll ignore Elliston because Elliston's Elliston, obviously. But in the Hunter Valley itself, there's three courses that I'll quickly, and I will do these in order because I think it's important. The Vintage is comfortably the best course, in my opinion, in the Hunter Valley. It's a Bob Harrison course and actually has some really good, interesting movement. All of the courses in the Hunter Valley have holes that play through vineyards because that's the thing, right? That's what you're there for. It's a little bit gnat, but yeah, you know, the Vintage does it really well. There's some really terrific short fours on the Vintage. Again, we talk with Bob in our chat that's going to air next week about his love of using crap land for short fours. Probably what annoys me about the Vintage is that all of the par threes have, apart from 17, have water carry. It's a little bit showy and there's homes, you know, ringing all of them. I think it's one of those examples where the golf was compromised a bit for the real estate play. But by and large, I think the Vintage is really worth playing. I think it rates about 70th in Australia, perhaps.
It might even be closer to the 50 mark than that.
Yeah, could be. And now Cypress Lakes Resort is right in the middle of Pocolban as well, in that wine country. And I've always enjoyed playing there. Yeah, the architecture's not as good as the Vintage, but I would say that the vineyard sort of vibe at Cypress Lakes is better. So if you're in the Hunter and you want to be around, you know, you want to be around vineyards and it's all about the wine, the golf there is absolutely good enough to justify playing, and it's going to be interesting. They've actually rerouted Maddie to start on a bit more of a comfortable part of the course with a par four. When I was a teenager, I used to go up there a bit with my dad to play, and the first hole was a par five over a dam with about 180 meter water carry. And so, yeah, it was hectic. Like, particularly pre-modern equipment, you know, I was a teenager with a big bertha, and you had to absolutely pipe one fresh out of a 2.5 hour, 3 hour drive out of the car. So I think now that's the 14th hole, which is probably a better place in the round for that shot. But yeah, big fan of that too. And would say if you're up in that region and you're going to play it, you won't be disappointed. The Crown Plaza course, which has been called, I think, Portofino Estate was its name when it opened. It's now Crown Plaza, and it's not good golf. It's not on good land. It's not especially engaging architecture.
Better to spend your time sampling some of the Shiraz from, or the warm climate Chardonnay from the Hunter Valley, rather than playing there, you're saying?
Yeah. Look, the last time I played there was the morning of a mate's wedding. We teed off at 8:30 and sort of were beers in hand by 10. And, you know, we were getting him ready to get married off. One of the fellas chipped in for eagle on one of the holes. You know, we enjoyed ourselves. I'm not going to pretend like you're not going to have fun, but if you're in the Hunter Valley, please go and play the Vintage or Cypress Lakes and leave Crown Plaza to accommodation.
So if you're in the region for a multi-day trip, the notion of playing multiple rounds at Newcastle is probably more thumbs up than thumbs down.
Yeah, certainly. I think you could go and, depending on what appeals to you, you could maybe check out a couple of the others. You know, you might find if you were holidaying, you're probably going to be based in either Lake Macquarie, the Hunter Valley, or Port Stephens. And so that would probably then dictate which of these other courses you made it a priority to see. Because I wouldn't say that any of the courses I've just named justify you driving from any of the other two regions to go to its region and play.
Okay.
So Newcastle, though, if you're staying in any of those areas, even if you're staying in Sydney and you are on a golf trip and the golf is what matters, make the drive. But certainly if you're in any of those three regions, getting into Newcastle, to Stockton, to play Newcastle Golf Club has got to be a priority.
Okay. Just circling back to the Lake Macquarie Amateur, I just had a little look while you were discussing all of those courses in the region. It was first played in 1958, last played in 2016.
Oh, right.
Its catalogue of winners from the 80s includes Kurt Byram, Jamie Crow, Peter O'Malley, and David Ecob. Fast forward to 92 when Stephen Leaney won it. Stephen Allen won in 96 and Ogilvy won after him. Rumford won after him. Scott Strange won in 2000. Nick Doherty in 01. Jared Lyle back-to-back in 03-04. Leishman 05. Scott Arnold 2009. He won the year after Danny Lee had won it. And from the 2010s onwards, its last few iterations, winners include Kieran Pratt, Brady Watt, Daniel Nisbet, Corey Connors, and Harrison Endicott. So that is a...
It's a murderer's row of legit players.
Exactly what I was going to say. Shout out Andy Johnson. That is a murderer's row. Yeah. So, yeah, if you want to go test your bona fides.
Yeah.
Go follow those footsteps.
Like the Kurt Byrams and the Corey Connors, that's what's like, really? Okay. Corey Connors is an international amateur. It's not just international in name.
Well, I assume that people were down here for either a Master of the Amateurs or an Australian amateur, and they thought, well, I'm here for a while and there's some Wagga points on offer. I'll go have my fill and tour the countryside. So
that was a cool event. I didn't realize it had actually ceased to operate. That's a shame. But yeah, it really was a who's who of winners.
Yeah. Getting back to Newcastle Golf Club, you've talked about its quality and its quality in comparison to its immediate neighbours. If we imagine for a second that it was in metropolitan Sydney, where does it rank in comparison to the big ticket courses like the Lakes, Bonnie Doon, Royal Sydney, the Australian? It's behind New South Wales, obviously.
Yeah, it's behind New South Wales. It's... So the hard thing is it's a bit like, well, it's a little bit like, you know, if you took the ocean away from New South Wales, would it be as good? If you moved Newcastle to Sydney, it would be in much better condition. It would have nicer amenity, I think. And those things would influence, I think, even where you are aware of them and try not to pay attention, I think. It would be a slightly different course were it in Sydney. But let's just say, you know, it remains exactly as is and it's in Sydney. I think it's probably in an arm wrestle with the Lakes to be the second best course in town.
Yeah.
I think that like New South Wales and the Lakes, New South Wales benefits from an incredible location next to the water, away from the busyness of a global city, whereas the Lakes has a motorway through the middle and an airport, you know, a few hundred metres away. It's a urban golf course, you know, and there's a lot of car noise and airplane noise and whatnot. Newcastle really benefits from its location as well, and I think that would be, you know, if you imagine, I guess, Newcastle on the land that St. Michael's is on, I think people wouldn't hesitate to say that's the second best golf course in Sydney.
Yeah, that'd be a showstopper. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because St. Michael's doesn't have, I mean, it's on the water next to New South Wales and next to the coast, but there's very little oceanfront golf at St. Mick's. You know, like 13, the 6th and 8th greens essentially are the only holes where you're right on looking at the water. So it's probably not a bad comparison. I just think the land at Newcastle is better than anything other than New South Wales Golf Club in Sydney. And I think the architecture is also. So, yeah. You agree?
Yeah, I do. There's a really long stretch of high-quality holes. And that it'd be the envy of so many places throughout Australia. It rewards the car trip up the road from Sydney to get there and hit those shots and see those holes.
Yeah.
And I also agree with you in that it's yeah, if your uncle was your auntie, yeah, it's a bit of a difficult proposition, but it does obviously derive great quality from the fact that it is 2 hours up the road and that there's solitude to when you play Newcastle and a sense of escape and isolation, save the occasional hornet that zips across from Williamtown Air Force Base. But that's a novelty in itself.
Yeah. So. I think too, I would love to, I guess, chat to someone who works and lives in Newcastle about it. Because for me, if I'm at Newcastle playing golf, it means I'm probably on holidays. At the very least, I've taken a day off and I'm doing something for me. I'm out of where I live. You know, I love living in Sydney, but I also love getting out of Sydney. So there is that. When I talk about those intangibles of rating golf courses, for me, being at Newcastle has a lot of associated things with how I'm feeling, and that obviously feeds into, you know, how you enjoy the course.
Definitely.
And I just love too that, like at Port Fairy, the management and members at Newcastle Golf Club are very comfortable with who they are and what they are and where they are and their place in the golf world. And this is a place where there's not airs of trying to be something they're not. There's not pretension or attempts to kind of polish things up. It's just a country golf club and it is what it is. And I don't know if it's from having grown up where I grew up, I really appreciate that sort of place and that sort of sensibility.
I think it's probably what golf needs almost more than ever. And there's some quarters within the game that have woken up and understood that. But it's we've used the phrase before, it's everything you need and nothing you don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really high quality course. And they haven't manicured it to the nth degree. It's more than adequately conditioned with good green speeds and firmness and good fairway coverage. And yeah, it isn't preened into something that it shouldn't mm-hmm. be.
We haven't talked a lot of specific holes, but I kind of like it when we don't talk about specific holes, because for people who don't already know them, it can be a tough listen, you know, hearing about, oh, the third, the bunkering on the left of the third, and you... Yeah. What does it mean if you haven't seen it?
Yeah.
But
we've got some good photos to put up for absolutely. The fifth and sixth. We've got an overhead of the course as it is at the moment and an aerial, including the proposed changes to put up. So that's really good. Really good stuff to look at alongside your discussion of how those flat land holes near the road are going to disappear and new ones are going to be created. So yeah.
I guess one thing I would say that we maybe have circled around, but we haven't maybe called out, is it has great variety in the holes. You know, the third is a really wonderful, you know, wood or hybrid shot, par three, smartly bunkered. For a shorter hitter, it sets up as a really strategic little short par four sort of decision. And from really there onwards on the course, we've talked about the quality of the holes, but there's great use of the land and the terrain in a variety of ways, and diagonal ridges on some holes with the land kind of streaming through that way. Others, you're taking on the hills straight on. And I think that's really, not only did Appley kind of rock up and there was great land and he used all of it, but he used all of it in really quite different ways. And I really like that. I really think that potentially, you know, it gets a little bit samey from, say, 14, 15, 17, 18. There's not a huge amount that distinguishes them kind of as golf holes or from one another. But until that point, the land is used in really interesting different ways. The green sites are a great combination of perched up on top of dunes, benched in, some that sit, you know, at low points. So it really, yeah, to that regard, I think when I think about the courses that I like the most, why do I like them the most? Often I sort of think, well, there's variety. There's not there's not a common theme that gets executed over and over. There's great variety in the way that the course presents. And so I think that's particularly for me something that, I think Newcastle has in spades.
Yeah, agreed. If you were, you referenced someone who lives and works up there, if that was their club, say they were in administration or some sort of industry based in Newcastle and they were visiting that course 45 times a year, they wouldn't get bored.
No, no, never. And that wind, is, I think, a great feature that you would never walk onto a, you know, you're walking from green to tee, approaching a par three, and you pull your 7-iron because you know this hole's always a 7-iron. You know, that was, for me growing up 60Ks inland, that was golf. It was like I knew that 17 was a 8-iron and, you know, 7 was a 6-iron and they always were and they always would be. You would never really know what you were going to be hitting in terms of the club or the type of shot at Newcastle until you got on the tee and felt the wind and looked for the pin. Yeah. And I need to find a time to get back on the M1 and head north.
Yeah. You could do it in a day, couldn't you?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. I've done it in a day a few times with visitors who've come from overseas and are staying in Sydney and are really keen to see it. You know, you get out of town at 7 a.m. and you're at Newcastle Golf Club by 10. You play golf. It's mid-afternoon. If it's summer, it's nice and warm. You head down to Merriweather. You go and have a feed and a few beers at the beach. Drive home while the sun's setting, kind of debriefing about the day and the golf and the holes and... Oh, it's a sensational day trip.
Like a down and back mission to the Mornington Peninsula for Melburnians.
There you go. And it's, you know, it's funny the fine lines in what makes a day trip because I was in Canberra over Easter. No, sorry, over Anzac Day weekend. So that's probably half an hour further from my house than Newcastle. And I would absolutely do Newcastle. Well, I have done it in a day a few times. I don't think I... You know, if I was saying to someone, let's go and play Royal Canberra, just that extra half hour in the car, I don't think that I would, unless it was necessary, do Canberra in a day. So maybe that kind of 2.25 to 2.5 is the limit of my day trip.
Yeah. I did a day trip to Port Ferry. Luke Iper did all the driving that day. And that was...
You guys got home at like 1 a.m. or something, didn't you?
Yeah. That was too much. Yes. Too much.
When I was living in London, a mate of mine who was from America, he was studying in London, he decided he wanted to play at Prestwick. He was running out of time before he moved home. And he did Prestwick, which is on the west coast of Scotland, west of Glasgow, yeah. Did Prestwick in a day. He caught the 5 a.m. train out of London. He played 32 holes at Prestwick and he got home at about 12:30 that night on the train. That's the most... hardcore day trip I've ever been aware of. He didn't just punch out a round of golf. He managed to get 32 in before the train. So, yeah, not a day trip I have any interest in matching, but certainly Newcastle from Sydney. Yep, green light.
All right. Well, I hope everyone's enjoyed listening to us prattle on about Newcastle. Really good course. And we're going to hear more about it amongst the hour-long discussion with Bob in the coming days. And we've got a string of good courses to continue to discuss in the coming months as well, Scott. So
yeah, really pumped.
I promise it won't be as long too. I'll get my thumb out and make sure that there's not a 3-week gap between editions.
So. Look, I think Easter into school holidays, into Anzac Day, into some illnesses in both our families. We won't do it again, but I won't beat us up too much for doing it this one time.
All right.
Unreal, mate. Thanks. Good to chat.